they switch into a different mode, and they say something like, the report I'm giving is on insects. Insects have six legs. And it sounds like maybe a computer voice, a mechanical voice, like you pushed a button and something came out. But there isn't this connection with the people. The carrier isn't there. They haven't really connected with the people. And I'm not talking about arm waving and a lot of dramatics here. I'm talking about simply speaking as though you're actually talking to the people that you're talking to. And so I like to think about developing oral skills, and especially in today's era, one of the benefits of growing older is to notice trends, notice changes. And there, 20, 30 years ago, the like came in, I'm like this, I'm like that. And now one of the current ones is that, yeah, and yeah. And with as the digital communication proliferates, it almost seems that if we don't work on it, we may lose the ability to actually speak to a person face to face. We have to tweet and Twitter and text and Snipe or whatever electronically. So let's think about ironic how perhaps someone could read and study and maybe even take tests, maybe even write an essay, question, and get fairly good grades. But when it comes to actually speaking about what the person has done, can he actually speak? And so one writer said, I believe it was Roger Bacon, that reading makes you fool, but conversation makes a ready man. That is, ready being that you can speak in the moment to the moment. If a student has read something or has learned something, he ought to be able to talk about what he has read or what he has heard. And that's what we want to discuss, how to do this in school. Articulate speech. Can you actually put into words some things that you have heard? And so I'd like us to think about developing both oral skills and oral skills. Now, they sound about the same, but one of them has to do with being able to speak, being able to talk orally about what you know in your mind, and the other is being able to listen and hear through the ear. Both of these are very important. And I suggest to you that you make sure that those skills develop. When students speak, let's just take something like the round robin reading, the old-fashioned round robin reading, where everybody has a copy of the text, the book, the story, and one person reads and the other people supposedly follow after in their books. Well, you know about that. I see a few smiles, because in that case, the person who's reading doesn't really need to read in such a way that the other people get it from his reading, because they all have their own text to read silently. Why would they listen to him? They can read it themselves. And he knows that, too. Now, if you occasionally at least have the other children close their books, guess what? This immediately changes the situation. He's now going to have to read in such a way that the other people can actually hear him. And furthermore, he should read it interpretively rather than just mechanically. And the people who are listening are going to have to listen and get it through the ear. There's something qualitatively different about hearing something through the ear than there is about reading it through the eye. And I'm not suggesting you revolutionize the way you teach, but I'm saying that these are skills that need to develop. And one thing in particular, the scriptures talk about hearing the words of the Lord. There's much more in there about hearing the Lord, hearing words, than there is about reading words. It's rather intriguing to me that I'm not saying we should stop it, but there's often a pattern that when somebody's going to read a verse from Scripture, it might be a verse that everyone has memorized. And we all turn to Romans 12:1, and we give plenty of time for everybody to get there. And then this person reads it aloud, and you kind of wonder, what about this hearing the words of the Lord? You know, sometimes when someone reads the word, I like to keep my Bible closed and use my ears. Some years ago, my wife and I discovered the experience of reading aloud to each other. She's read over the years a couple books. I remember the first one that she read aloud to me, and I refrained from ever cracking the covers of that book and looking in it. The total story I got through the ear, and it's a different experience. When you hear, when you are listening, you cannot go any faster or any slower than the person who's reading. You can't back up. You can't. If you let your mind daydream a bit, you lost it because it went fast and you can't go back and get it. And there's something different about hearing and processing things you've heard through the ear. Well, that can go parallel then with the oral. And so make sure there are some times that children must learn by ear, and make sure there are other times when children are reading aloud or speaking aloud that the other children must listen to that. We know how it is sometimes when children do give oral reports. Sometimes we don't; they don't really need to listen because they aren't responsible to learn that. But if a child gives a little extra report on insects or something, well, you can have them actually make a little quiz based on that. Well, moving on. Just think of the variety of times in adult life where there are public speaking settings. The greatest fear, they say, that people have is the fear of death. And you probably heard what comes next. What's the second greatest fear that people have? Public speaking. Public speaking. It paralyzes people, freezes them up. And if that's true, we ought to think something about that in our school, in our schools, because there are many situations in life where you should be able to speak. When we say public speaking, we're not thinking here of quote, speech class. That's a different subject, and that is part of oral presentation. But I'm speaking here of just overall, when you open your mouth in the presence of a group of people. Some people don't want to do that. Whether it's in, just think in adult life, in Bible studies, in family devotions, Sunday school discussion or Sunday school teaching, and family gatherings, telling about a trip that you were on, or sharing travel experiences, or giving somebody directions how to get somewhere, or giving explanations. There are many opportunities in adult life where you ought to be able to give an articulate speech, either explain something to somebody or tell a group something or answer some questions. And so these are skills to develop. So provide an opportunity for students to hear by ear. So I suggest, I alluded to this some already, but look at the situation there. The picture on the left is a child sitting there reading. If you have story time in your school, guess what? The teacher doesn't always need to do the reading. You can have a student do reading sometimes. And if it's a good book, a good read, and the other students are going to want to hear this, and they're going to want to hear it read well also, not just in mechanical monotone voice. And so one consideration is to occasionally have a child read a book to a group that the group hasn't heard. And of course, in Bible reading, and one of the ways to teach children how to read well or to speak well is to model it. Children learn very rapidly by modeling, by imitation. I can think of an example here just Sunday before we left home. My son and his family were at our place for lunch, and when we pray, we sometimes fold our hands or put them down under the table. But this time, without thinking, I folded my arms like this as someone prayed, and we were finished. And my daughter-in-law smiled and she said, Arabella is their little 1.5-year-old. She said, she's still working on this. And we looked at her, and here she was trying to get her arms folded like mine were folded. It was quite an activity for her. And my daughter-in-law knew that she had never done that before. She noticed this, that she was getting the one hand in this way and the other one out that way. Now, I say this to point out that imitation is one, and modeling is one of the fastest ways that children learn. If you want a fast track to children learning, give them a model, give them a demonstration, give them an imitation, something they can imitate, and say, go and do likewise. And so what I'm saying is that as a teacher, you can model or make sure they hear models of good reading. For example, there are some excellent recordings of Bible reading done with people with probably articulate speech better than any of us have. And listening to some Bible reading like that and demonstrating to them how to do it. And it's also fun sometimes to demonstrate how not to do it. I'll talk a bit about that later. But prepare them, and let's go to something else here, and we will. Here's a little story. You're sitting kind of far back, so I'll read this so you can follow it. A little boy once found a jar of nuts on the table. I would like some of those nuts, he thought. I'm sure Mother will give them to me if she were here, would give them to me if she were here. I'll take a big handful. So he reached into the jar and grabbed as many as he could. Hold. But when he tried to pull his hand out, he found the neck of the jar was too small. His hand was held fast, but he did not want to drop any of the nuts. He tried again and again, but he couldn't get the whole handful out. At last, he began to cry. Just then, his mother came into the room. What's the matter? She asked. I can't take this handful of nuts out of the jar, sobbed the boy. Well, don't be so greedy, said his mother. Just take two or three, and you'll have no trouble getting your hand out. How easy that was, said the boy as he left the table. I might have thought of that myself. Now, there are many occasions where students have read a story, and one of the things to help them develop is the ability to discuss something or to give thoughtful, articulate answers. And so let me just ask a few questions here. You imagine that you're the class now of third or fourth graders or second, and let me ask you, why do you suppose this boy began to cry? Let's hear some articulate answers from you. And notice I said, why do you suppose? So you can't be wrong as long as it's what you suppose. He was disappointed? What was he disappointed about?
Wasn't getting what he wanted.
All right. Mm-hmm. What else? Yes.
He was frustrated because something that seemed so simple was impossible for
him. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting word you use there, frustrated. What does that mean, to be frustrated?
It's a low form of anger.
Oh, really? So frustration and anger are first cousins, or are they? Is it now? I'm jumping above third and fourth grade here, but this is discussion. By the way, I want to point out how you can, and you're doing very well. It's interesting to try to get a discussion going, but and you have to kind of go with what develops here. So we have anger and frustration here. Is it possible to be frustrated and not be angry and not get angry? What do you think?
I would say no, because anger is a motivation that helps us get something done sometimes.
Okay.
So it must be controlled.
All right.
Frustration takes over and boils into something that is unmanageable.
All right, yes.
I'm going to argue, yes, it is possible to be frustrated without being angry.
All right. At this point, if you had a class and we were discussing something, you could ask somebody to do what? What am I thinking at this point? I'm thinking of a book. There's an old-fashioned book, starts with a D.
A dictionary.
They could look up the word in the dictionary and see what frustration, what the dictionary says frustration is. If you try to get a box open, some of this tape, you know, is so strong that you can't tear it. You've got to get a knife. And so if you can't get it open and you're trying really hard, are you frustrated? What do you think? Would you call that frustration? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, okay, now we could go further there, but we don't have time for that. But let me jump over here and try something else, coming back to the story here. What are some other situations that cause little boys to cry? Besides not being able to get their hand out of a cookie jar with too many cookies in it. What are some other situations or experiences that cause little boys to cry?
Failure.
What else? Sure, being injured. Anything else? Well, we will move on. What I wanted to do here was just take a moment, a couple minutes to, the point isn't the boy in the nuts here. The point is there are times in whatever class, Bible class, history class, current events, whatever, that there's something, so to speak, on the floor that it might involve some question and answer where you're expecting the students to do some thinking and then be able to articulate what they're thinking. Or actually, sometimes you can move away from just question and answer into discussion. And discussion is fun, and it's an art to lead a discussion. Because as the teacher, as the discussion leader, you have to, when somebody mentions something, you have to know when to pick up on that and to go somewhere with it. For example, I remember years ago when we were discussing or studying a passage from a Pathway Reader on Amos Fortune, Free Man. It's a selection in there about, and the question was poverty, and we were making a list of reasons why people are poor. And I remember this one boy saying he thinks some people are poor because they want to be poor, or they're satisfied to be poor. And when somebody says something like that, as a teacher, you ought to pick up on it and realize, oh, there's fruit, there's material to push that a little bit. And you immediately, instead of just adding it to the list and going on, you say, oh, explain yourself. Is that so? And that's right for the discussion. And if your students can have the experience in class of truly discussing something, in a true discussion, you don't know what direction this is going to go. And you don't know what's going to come up. Now, you have to be careful you don't go too far out in too many rabbit trails. It can go end up far away from where you started. And, of course, you decide that a little bit by your purposes. If you really want them to develop the ability to speak, and for this person to respond to what that person said, this person to respond to that person said, you're accomplishing something by letting the discussion free will. On the other hand, if your purpose is to have them discuss a certain theme or topic, then you have to steer it back to where you want to go. Well, let's look at something else. Another question is here is being able to articulate something. And so on your outline here, I just had an example of being able to explain a problem. So suppose in math, you're studying greatest common factor. A person ought to be able to put that into words. And so let me throw that out. What do we mean by the greatest common factor. Now, normally, if you were teaching, you would use the chalkboard and some visuals, but let's try it with words. What is now, you're teachers, so I'll ramp up the pressure here. You all know what this is, but let me hear you articulate this. What do we mean by the greatest common? What I'm saying here is that sometimes when we're trying to solve a problem, it's helpful to say, what really are we talking about here? What is the greatest common factor of two numbers? I see some people thinking. Let's hear some words here. This is about articulate speech. You're allowed to raise your hand. If you don't, why? Yes.
Okay. So the greatest common factor would help us if we had to fill crates with different amounts of something, but we wanted to design a machine that could pick up the most in a bundle and place it into those different crates in a way that's going to work out evenly for both total volumes of crate.
All right.
So for instance, if I have to fill this one with 35 pieces and I have to fill this one with 49 pieces, What size should I build my machine to pick up units? What number of units should those things pick up to go to each box?
All right. Mm-hmm. And what would be the biggest? No, somebody else tells. You said 49, 35. Okay, and you want to pick up units and put them in. So what would be the biggest group that he could use? Pardon? Seven, yes. All right, now another kind of question here. What's the difference between weight and mass? We won't take the time to unpack that one entirely, but that's one that you can go around on a while to really grasp the difference between weight and mass, the science field. And I'll move on here because there's some other topics. How is an adjective different from an adverb? Let's go to language arts. They both start with AD, and students often get them mixed up. And sometimes it's easier, though, to understand two things than it is one thing. So let's try that one. In words, how? What's the difference? You're the students now. What would you hope your students would say if you ask them to tell how an adjective is different from an adverb?
An adjective describes the things you see, and an adverb describes the things you do.
All right. Somebody give us some examples now. She's got a good definition there. All right, you go ahead. What are some things you can see that you could use an adjective to describe? Adjective to describe things you see, you say? Mm-hmm. Such as some adjectives?
The hard pulpit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Adverb, something that you can do. All right. Enough on that one. Now, provide opportunity for your students to give oral reports. And this could be mini reports, it could be formal reports, but it might be something as small as maybe you're studying mammals, for example. And so you might give each student a different unusual mammal, and a copy, or maybe some type of marsupial like a kangaroo. And then tomorrow or next Friday, each one has, maybe give them 2 minutes. And that's all. No more, no less. And they're to practice as close to 2 minutes as they can to tell you about kangaroos. And they're to, when they do that report, you know, these are good training things. You can hatch several birds with one egg here by not only is the whole student body learning something about kangaroos that's not in your curriculum, but also the student is gaining a little bit of experience in research and preparing a report, but he's also having the experience and the developing a skill of standing before a group, connecting with them, and giving, delivering some information. And they're also developing the practice of listening by ear and learning something by ear. Think how valuable those 2 minutes can be. And here's an example where you can, as a teacher, you can model this, and you can tell them what not to do. And you can say, when you are going to talk about your kangaroos, this is what we don't want to hear. This, my report is on kangaroos. Kangaroos hop on their back legs. Kangaroos have pouches. Kangaroos carry babies in their pouches. Well, you're not interested in hearing that. Why not? Well, it's monotone. I was reading it back into my paper. I didn't connect with you. And you can actually give them examples of, you can say, for example, I've done this already with oral book reports. You can give your students an example of maybe a C report and say, if you talk like this, this is a C. This one I gave you might even be just unacceptable. You just have to do it over. And then you can give them an example of maybe a B or an A. And you can ask them, why am I saying this is a C report? And many of these times when students, unless you train them to deliver this well, many times they don't enjoy giving it, and the other students don't enjoy listening to it because of the humdrum, ho-hum way it's delivered. And so you want them to first of all, you know, they connect with the group. I'm telling you today about kangaroos. Kangaroos are those unusual animals that are something like rabbits, but they're much bigger. And they have long hind legs, and they can sit in those days. And then they hop and land again on the hind legs. And it would be fun to ride on the kangaroo, but it would be quite bouncy. And then there's something else unusual about them. On their belly, they have a pouch. And they carry, mama kangaroo carries, and so on. And it's actually interesting and can be fun to give a report like that. And you can have your students practice. One of the things that I wish I had discovered this earlier, I was only in the last year or two of my teaching I did this, but this was 9th and 10th grade. I had them read some biographies. That is, each student was given a person, and they were to read at least 2 sources on that person so they learn something significant about their life. For example, George Washington Carver. And then they were to give it was totally an oral presentation, and it was recorded. They did not deliver it live. And it was to be 20 minutes. And they had a fair amount of time to do this, and they were to produce this and then listen to themselves and then edit it, and then do it again, and they weren't supposed to deliver it until they were satisfied with it. And then when the time came to deliver these, they sat in the class along with everybody else, and we sat there and we listened to it, and they listened to themselves giving an oral presentation to the group. It was rather fascinating because they actually had heard, they were supposed to listen to themselves first. And they were also allowed to include things like maybe a dialogue if they wanted to, if they could do it in an interview format, or maybe add a few sound effects if they wanted to, which some did. But there's something about producing an oral presentation. Some students don't realize what they sound like, but that was something different and something I would suggest you might try sometime in having them hear themselves. And so giving reports, whether they are mini reports or formal reports. And those reports don't need to be a big thing that's a big project. It might be just something to find out for tomorrow. It might be something you're talking about in class. And you might ask Jane to find out a little more about that and tell us tomorrow. And it might only be 30 seconds or a minute's worth. But it's something that the class is depending on you to find out and tell us, not necessarily something that is graded. Let's go to some settings for speaking. One is morning devotions, including school assemblies. Students can be asked to read a Bible passage, to read the verse. And when it comes to reading a Bible passage, I recall someone saying some years ago, he read Genesis 1:1 and recited it. And he said, first he said this, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness covered the face of the deep." He said, "Do you believe that?" And he said, "No." He said, "I don't believe that." He said, "This is what I believe. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. And darkness covered the face of the deep." There's a way of, we all know how it is to exaggerate. If you talk to the dog and you say to your dog, "You're a naughty dog, come here, and I'm going to smack you because you were a naughty dog today." He'll probably come up wagging his tail. On the other hand, if you say, "You're a wonderful dog, come here, I'm going to pet you," well, he'll probably put down his head and wonder what's going on, because dogs know very well that the bearing and the spirit and the body language communicates quite a bit. And of course, they don't understand the English. Now, the point being that when we speak to people, yes, the words do, arguably, at least if it's in text, the words do mean what they say. But when a person is reading something to you or speaking to you, his bearing and his body language can be saying something different from what the words are saying, and which is the person who's listening supposed to believe? What are they supposed to think? And I'm not talking about histrionics and a lot of dramatics here. I'm talking about thinking about what you are reading and actually delivering it. So there's plenty of opportunity. As a teacher, you don't always have to do all the readings. If there's going to be a devotional read from a devotional book, a student can read that, at least sometimes. Or read a poem or recite a poem. There are hymn history books where they give interesting backgrounds on hymns. And you can have, this would not require research. You can simply give the book to somebody and say, "Wednesday morning in devotions, we're going to be singing whatever song. Rescue the Perishing. Here's a story about that. I want you to read this and be prepared on Wednesday to read this to the class with good expression." And then, of course, there are recitations. And you can start training your first graders immediately how to recite something well. And you can point out to them that for some reason it seems there's a schoolboy, schoolgirl voice that isn't used any other time. And rather than that voice, use a more natural voice. And so instead of saying, "There was a naughty boy was he ran away from Scotland the people for to see," why, you say, "There was a naughty boy was he. He ran away to Scotland, the people, for to see." And model good recitation. In our school, they have a practice they started a couple years ago on Friday afternoons, once a month. They have a sharing time where the whole student body gathers in the main assembly room, and then each room has a few minutes to share something from what they learned in the last month. So this could be a reading, could be a recitation, could be a mini report or showing something. And on that day, so that gives opportunity to read something or share something with the whole student body, but it also gives opportunity for a few other people to come in if they want. So this is publicized, and last Friday, this opportunely happened right before we left on this trip. So a few grandparents came in, including my wife and myself, and a couple parents who were going to drive anyway just came a bit early and sat in on this. And I just snapped a couple pictures of this. So this is one group. They simply stood up there in a row, and each had a book in his or her hand. And then they went down the row. And this second person here is holding up the book and telling something. I believe it was about octopuses they had read about. She had read about an octopus. And by standing in the group here, for one thing, it expedites it, but it gives you a little bit of security. You're standing between your classmates. And it does a number of things. Here's another one. These were some, Yes, there we go. So here there were two standing beside each other, and they took turns. One read and then the other read. But you can do, sometimes there's a reading that involved two people, and they were reading something from their notebooks, something they had learned. But this does several things. It does give you an opportunity to present something to a larger group. It also kind of brings a school together. You know, schools can easily be separate little islands where you have your first and second grade room and the third and fourth and so on. You don't necessarily interact other than recess, and you don't necessarily know what's going on in other rooms. So that's one example of an opportunity to share orally with a student body. Going on in your outline on the backside, how, what to share, report, and so on. The teacher yourself, model examples of what you want. Students should know what you expect, and I've talked about modeling. Occasionally, if you're going to have your students do an oral book report, they should have heard you make an oral book report at least once. And make sure they hear good models. And they can find outside information. And looking at D here, students can share orally from assignments their own answers or response. The response is not just for a grade, but for the purpose of sharing with the group. And they can also occasionally summarize. Now, I'd like to show you a couple examples here of another way to have students share. It's not unusual for a school to put on display some artwork, or maybe a poster. In this case, an art teacher had students make a small sculpture. What you're looking at here is a sculpture made of wire with aluminum foil over it. And then they also had a little kind of a poster behind it, and each one had a theme. One was on a teacher, another was, I think, on compassion. And they were supposed to somehow illustrate compassion with pictures and also with the sculpture they made. But the point I'm making is when this then is put on display, you can get extra mileage out of this by having the students gather there and having each individual interpret what he has done. And it's not unusual, this is a similar thing, to have students do a book report. If you want ideas for book reports, make a poster display for a book report with the title of the book and some pictures. This allows students to use different talents. Those who like to draw can draw. This is a brief summary of the book and a few pictures. But I've seen this kind of thing done very well already. I have a couple more examples here. Here's one, the Bible or the Acts. And you look at that and you see a very good presentation. You know that the person who read the story, you know that they enjoyed the story. And then you ask them to tell the group about it. And it's pathetic, the mumbling and bumbling that some of them go through. Though they have this wonderful thing, and they'll say, this story is about the Bible and the Acts. The man went to, I don't know that story, so I just have to make something up. Who's familiar with this? Anybody? This particular one? Where did it happen? Okay, in West Africa? All right. Maybe you want to give us a report on it. But my point is, if you've read this and know it well enough to have made this poster, and we're looking at it, and you're here, you should be able to interpret that poster to us, and you've got the crutches there, and you can tell what's about the axe. Why does it have that title? And you should be able to give a good presentation on it, and also then entertain questions. And this is something else you can do. You can train your students to ask questions. Thinking about oral work, you know, it's harder to ask a good question sometimes than to answer one. One time we had a field trip to a Cornwall furnace, an old iron furnace there north of Lancaster County. And the way the schedule worked out, this was after lunch, and probably because of the length of the tour, we would probably get back to school in time to have one class yet before we go home. And I told the students, now, when we get back to school, it's going to depend on the questions that you ask. If there's enough, if there are questions, the tour guides will answer them, and the tour might actually take longer, and we might not get back to school in time for a class. And that tour guide was really impressed at the questions. They said, you people are really interested in this. And they asked, and it wasn't stupid questions either, like what's that line on the floor. They did ask questions that applied. And so asking a question, you have to be thinking about the subject in order to ask a relevant, intelligent question that helps to expand it. So what I'm saying here is that one step beyond this, so if this student then gives the oral presentation, interpreting, you could use as a model, now interpret this poster. Tell us why you chose this picture. Tell us why it's titled this way. And then when they're finished, then you can go another step and expect your students to ask that person questions. And when I say ask questions, not just generic questions like, tell us more about the book, but something that actually picks up on something they said and actually helps to unpack further. Does that make sense? You see how you can use it? Because there several things are happening at one time. You're learning something significant about a worthwhile book. This person is developing a lifelong skill of being able to talk about, interpret something that he has done. And the listeners are learning something by ear. And then you can also ask them to think of other questions. And when they do ask good questions, that person, his answering those questions requires him to articulate answers that he hadn't necessarily planned for. And there's one on the Scarlet Letter, if you're familiar with that. Hidden Rainbow. If you haven't done this kind of book report, at the same time, it gives you wonderful things to hang on the wall, if you need ideas of things to put on the wall. God Knows My Size. Who's read that book? Great read. And there's the, based on the Pilgrim's Progress. You could do quite a bit of talking about that one. And then here's another example from the other Friday. And this, I'm referring here to presenting your own writings. This would be I on your paper. Present writing, have an author presentation. This girl, I think she's in third or fourth grade, and she has tremendous writing ability. And she stood up there and she read for 5 minutes solid from something she had written. And not embarrassed at all, in a good, clear voice. And if you have a student like that, now you have to know your students and know the student body. You don't want to make this person proud, but an author presentation, when a person has actually written a composition, written a little poem or a short story, and you have them read what they've written to the class, or in this case, to the school. It adds a layer to it where they're actually reading an original piece, and the other students are also seeing that it's possible for someone my age to write something like that. And so there's a number of things can go on here. So think of ways for the to have students share things that they have written. And then looking down the list, I'll just point out a few other things. Looking at number or H here, share results of project interviews, studies. Interviews, that actually is another kind of an oral thing that you ought to build into your curriculum somewhere or into your year somewhere. The experience of talking to an adult, it might mean asking dad something or asking Uncle Sam something, and having them find out something. It might be as simple as talking to grandpa about how things were 30 or 40 years ago. What did bread cost? I remember my mother coming home some years ago saying she saw a box of cereal and it was 50 cents. And she was distressed at how high-priced cereal was becoming. And so an interview is a kind of oral interaction too. Think of opportunities for your students to interview people. There are times that, looking at K, that you can have two students read something together in pairs, going back and forth. And then don't forget the old-fashioned show and tell. Sometimes that's done with younger grades, and that's fine. But older students can do it, too, with something a little more complicated, explaining how something works. Another kind of oral thing is where you explain how to do something. For example, maybe you have a student who can solve a Rubik's Cube in just a minute or two. Tell him, now, tell the class how you do this. How do you do this? And kind of talk through it as you do it. Just the ability to talk through something as you do it. I'll finish up here by pointing out some tips for the timid. There are some children who are really timid, and there are steps you can take. If you're going to have the whole group, say you have seven students and each one's going to recite his poem, don't start with that most timid one. Don't put him at the very end either. But after maybe one or two, then have that person in the middle. And occasionally, if they're really, really timid, one step to help that would be to have somebody read what they have written. And so they could at least come and stand there beside you as a teacher or that person, and they're there and they're hearing what that person wrote. Okay, so if I'm timid, I stand there beside the teacher and the teacher reads my piece, but at least my being there up front is one step towards that. And maybe have them read before a small group of two or three friends and then work your way up. Oral book reports can be very valuable, but it takes some time to develop that skill. Students tend to want to go up there and either they tell the whole story of the whole book or else, and you know, they'll go on for an hour if you let them, or an hour and a half. And other ones are so generic and bland in their presentation that you don't really have a feel for what the book was about. It's better to actually have them develop the skill to give a brief overview of the book and then tell a bit about the plot and then actually have them maybe read a couple paragraphs for a genuine sample of what this book is like, and then give a few details, something they enjoyed about it. And so in conclusion, I like to say encourage students to know what they have and be able to articulate it. It's possible to have something in there, and you know how we often say, well, I know it, but I can't put it in words, or I can't say it. And that's our challenge. Reading makes a full man, and our students get full and they learn a lot. But, and this you can't really put into a printed curriculum. It's something as a teacher you have to think along the way. Morning devotions, It could be formal school programs, but just in class, there's plenty of opportunity to have students develop articulate speech. Thank you. I think we have another session here in just a couple minutes, so we have a bit of a break now.